2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Great. Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Ponce from the Prospect Team. As always, alongside me is our lead fantasy analyst, the creator of RoboScout, Dylan White. Dylan, we have a power-packed show today. We had a couple of guys called up in the Dodgers system. Gavin Stone, who started tonight. It's not been great. Not been great. Changeup is not landing, coach. And he's just like middling like everything else that he's thrown. We got Bobby Miller making his major league debut as well. Tomorrow, we're recording this on Monday. It comes out on Tuesday. You excited for the Bobby Miller debut? Do you have him rostered anywhere in any of your leagues?
I do not. I had him in two dynasty leagues, and I traded him last year, maybe the beginning of last year. So now I like to move my pitching prospects. Like I mentioned last week, I moved Tink Hentz. I've traded a lot of pitching prospects, actually. Basically, anyone good, I've probably moved. And then when they start to debut, that's when I start to wince, because this is the thing that I fear, that they start the Grayson Rodriguez and Yuri Perez. All these guys are starting to kind of actualize as they are. I don't have Bobby Miller. I didn't pick him up. I don't know if I'll be able to pick him up next week in NFBC leagues when he's available.
He costs a million fab dollars.
Exactly. I know I tend to not be able to get these the crown jewels of each week's fab, and I believe he will be the crown jewel. Unless Gavin Williams comes up or something beforehand. I'm very curious to see how he is, just as a baseball fan and as a prospect lover, to see how he does and to see all his stuff working in the major leagues. I just love to see that. But I don't have an investment in my leagues.
Yeah, and we have a power-packed day of pitching prospects tomorrow with Taj Bradley makes a start, Bobby Miller, Bradley is at home against Toronto. Miller is on the road against the Braves. And also Yuri Perez makes his third start. We'll see if the regression monster comes here at Coors, at Colorado, in the altitude. We'll see how that goes. Thus far, though, it's been a fairly impressive showing over the first two starts for the young Yuri. What are your thoughts there? I know this is kind of off the cuff, but is that somebody that, how are you feeling about the early performance and such? Is he somebody you're rostering in redraft or would, et cetera?
No, but I don't have any redrafts, but I did just start him this week in 15-team Dynasty because of the two-step, including Coors. So I'm starting him this week this is a league I'm in first place with, that I share with Tim McLeod. We co-manage and we are doing well, and we're putting Yuri in for the two step where he could blow up. And so that's how I'm using him right now. But we were just talking just before going on air about the fantasy top 100 we're working on. And I have Yuri ahead of Grayson. I think you do too. And Painter is down. Like the three of those, Yuri Perez, Grayson Rodriguez, and Andrew Painter, were kind of in a cluster before the season. Painter's injury has kind of knocked him down. Now Grayson and Yuri are both in the bigs. And I have Yuri ahead of Grayson, and you do too. So I guess that's an act of confidence in Yuri and what he's done so far. Not really a knock on Grayson. I still like Grayson. I think Yuri is, I think he's the guy that I want, now as opposed to Grayson, if I was to do a startup dynasty.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with that either. I think there's a few guys that I might even want to have like ahead of Grayson. I think one of the names that I had brought up to you were Grayson versus Brandon Pfaadt, who's also, struggled some, or Liberatore, who we've seen struggle previously in the major leagues, but this is his second or third time, you know, on the active roster. So rest of career, not even rest of season. Are you sticking with Grayson there, or are you leaning more toward one or the other?
I think it's Grayson. I think I got to go Grayson. I think just even thinking 3 years ahead, like that Oriole team is just going to be very strong, the lineup surrounding him. So I feel like he'll be like 15 plus wins per year. Brandon Pfaadt, I really like still. The stuff has been getting hit hard in the majors so far, but I still believe in it. Liberatore, I like the step forward he's taken this year. I've always thought of him as a kind of a high floor pitcher, but now like he's added a couple ticks to his velocity. So I'm not sure how real it is, but I feel that that's raised that floor at a minimum. I just don't know if he has the ceiling, quote unquote, that like Pfaadt has. So it's kind of like, which do you prefer? Do you prefer like the safer pick, which I think would be a Liberatore, or if you want to kind of swing for the fences with Pfaadt? But I still think Grayson's ahead of both for me.
Yeah, no, I agree as well. Here's a more tricky one. You already said Yuri. I think I agree with that. What about him versus Bryce Miller?
I still think it's Yuri.
Well, I'm saying Grayson.
Grayson or Bryce Miller. Ugh. I'm gonna stay with Grayson. I think again, it's probably because of the lineup. I just feel that the Oriole hitters are gonna give him the run support he needs to give him some wins, and I'm less confident in Seattle having a great lineup.
Taj Bradley or Grayson?
I'm gonna still stick Grayson. I think his much maligned performance recently in the majors is too much. I think people are whatever it's called, being too critical, overreacting,
reactionary.
Exactly. I don't think he's actually been that bad. Like his Sierra and all that stuff compared to the ERA, is much better and kind of in line. And the projections haven't really, I kind of still agree. Like they still kind of have him like mid threes ERA rest of season and stuff. Compared to Taj Bradley, Brandon Pfaadt, these guys, Gavin Stone, Bobby Miller. So I still believe in Grayson. And I think he's going to have a very good career.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I guess the last one I was going to ask is Tanner Bibee.
Yeah. I think it's still Grayson for me.
I was very close on that one. I can tell you that I actually do have Miller, Bibee, and Taj Bradley all ahead of Grayson Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I have Painter ahead of Rodriguez as well right now. I'm not super low, you know, but I've reset some expectations just based on some things that I've seen. Did make a change in his arm slot from the guy that I saw like 2 years ago. And I don't know if it's necessarily been as fruitful for results and pitch shapes as it has been for health with him. And I think in the long run, you'd rather have him throwing, right? So I do understand that. I still think it is a potential top of the rotation type of arm. There's just a lot of pitching prospects that probably much to my detriment, I like right now. And there's some that are showing it in the majors. And I just think inherently those guys have some right now value. And I've always been fans of Bibee and Miller. I've grown to like Taj Bradley a lot more after watching him in the major leagues and seeing how the stuff plays. So, we'll see. I think time will tell. It's all very close in rankings, I think, for most folks, unless you're very reactionary, which is your prerogative, and that's perfectly fine. But
like I have just, sorry to interrupt. So I do like last 30 day, thing for my in-season tracking. So last 30 days for Grayson, He has a 1.66 whip and a 5.86 ERA. So obviously that's terrible. But yep. His xFIP is 4.04 and his Sierra is 4.15. He has a 3.55 BABIP. Like, it's all kind of quote-unquote bad luck. I know that's kind of lazy analysis, but, like, I just think everyone's just overreacting. He's got a basically ERA of 4, if you go by those indicators. And sure. That's solid. And his BABIP is going to come down. He's not really getting a hit that hard.
He's had a little bit of a home run issue.
He does have a bit of a home run issue, but usually that's, you know, that's not that sticky, which Fair. Is why xFIP is better than, quote unquote, better, more predictive than ERA for ERA.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not great. There's a lot of, like, the barrel rate's higher than average. The O swing's worse than average. Hard hit rate, like you're saying, is worse than average, but still, I just think it's just a blip. He's going to right the ship as long as he doesn't hear the critics and it gets into his head. I still think he's the best of that bunch.
Fair. I think it's closer than we would have expected, but I also just really like a few of those guys that are mixed in there. But we do agree on Yuri. And they're all guys that are in the top 5 or 6 pitching prospects in the game, I think, probably in most conversations. But let's move on to another one. Let's stay in the Orioles here. This is an Orioles-focused fantasy podcast. What's your level of concern right now with Gunnar Henderson?
Yeah, not that high. Not that high at all. Same thing. I looked at my 30-day spreadsheet. If you take similar profiles, this actually surprised me. So he has a WRC plus in the last 30 days of 97, which isn't even that bad. So that's league average. And if you take his walk rate, strikeout rate, all that stuff, slugging, ground ball, barrels, contact, swinging strike, and you kind of see who's performed similarly, Julio Rodriguez is actually one of the closest comps to him. And I didn't realize how bad Julio has been in the last 3 days. He has a 64 WRC plus. Their walk rate, I'm going to read Gunner's and then Julio Rodriguez is next. So walk rate, 12.9 for Gunnar Henderson, 12.9%. Julio, 11.4. K-Wright, 30.6% for Gunnar. Julio, 31%. The contact rate, they're both at 68%, 68.5%. And, oh, sorry, Julio is 65.9%. Like, Julio is not doing well at all. Swinging strike rate for Julio, 17%. And Gunnar only at 13%. And the knock on Gunnar coming to the year, those who were like kind of the lowest on him were saying like he hits everything on the ground. His ground ball rate is only 44% in the last 30 days. So again, I think it's just sort of
40%
like,
fly ball rate. I pulled some numbers up as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like he's just like striking out at 45%. He's not walking. He's not chasing so much out of the zone or he's just hitting it on the ground. It's like not like that. It's just, he has a WRC plus of 97. So it's not that bad at all. Yeah. So if this is as bad as it gets, and this is where people are thinking that he should be benched or he should be sent down or he's got to get his head straight, like I think people are being way too harsh.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a very firm hold on Gunnar Henderson. And, you know, the struggles against lefties are very real. That's probably the one true red flag that there's there, and there's obviously like platoon issues, but he's still very young, and I think he can probably write that to at least to a point where it's tolerable, and he just does a ton of damage against right-handers, which are the majority of pitchers, which isn't such a bad thing. So there you go. We both agree that, you know, he's definitely a hold. You are more convicted on Grayson than I am, though I wouldn't exactly call myself on the panic bus here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's an interesting conversation that I heard discussed a little bit, really more in the general construct of like, who's the best prospect in baseball? I think this was in the Future Projection podcast with Carlos Collazo, Ben Badler. Go check that out. If you guys like baseball conversations, and there's like 3 days worth of content every single time you tune in, because they're like 2 to 3 hours. They go much longer than you and I do, and they're marathon men. But you're talking about, you know, who's the best prospect in baseball, like, sort of their personal opinions. I thought it would be interesting to sort of have this conversation quickly as we're working on this. We have sort of three folks here that would be considered the best prospect in fantasy baseball. So the construct is obviously much more heavily slanted toward hitting. You just want to make sure that the guy gets in the lineup, plays enough defense for that. But I think there's three very worthy candidates, maybe four if you want to throw Jordan Walker into the mix. That'd be Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio, and Ellie De La Cruz. So who's number one for you and why? And I think we can talk through sort of all three of these candidates.
I think for fantasy, I think it's Ellie De La Cruz. I just think he's kind of like the O'Neill Cruz, with just the huge power and the big speed and the big arm, just super electric. And the underlying isn't so bad that it's all red flags, and it's like, I don't even think he'll be able to meet that, to actualize that. So I think it's got to be Ellie De La Cruz. If I were a general manager, a real life general manager, and I was starting up a team, it probably would be Jackson Holliday, though. So I just feel he's a safer floor. I think he's definitely going to be, you know, a 3 to 4 war player type of thing. And consistent, he plays up the middle, as does Ellie. Just, I feel like he's a safer pick than Ellie De La Cruz, but I just think Ellie's like that superstar potential.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, you could say there's risk reward with Ellie De La Cruz. I do think that that's a little dramatic based on what we've seen. Yeah, will he strike out some? Will there be some swing and miss, particularly early in his career? Yeah, I think so. But he does damage and does things in a baseball field that I think are only sort of within that sort of Tatis stratosphere, where there's just few people that can even do these things. Super athletic and twitchy and, you know, reactive, doing things in games, stealing bases in ways that most players cannot, hitting home runs in ways that players cannot. So I really struggled between him and Jackson Holliday myself. I may actually even flip-flop back to Ellie before we release the list. But I ended up going Jackson Holliday. I think part of it is probably safety, but I do think that his plate skills, meaning the decisions he makes, how frequently does his chase rate, all that sort of stuff, but just also the pitches that he swings at in zone, you look at the contact rate, the end zone contact rate, they're all tremendous, like top of the scale sort of numbers pretty much across the board. He hits the ball really hard. That's the other thing from looking at the data that we've been able to take a look at. It's been a week or two, so I don't think that's slowed down based on the numbers he's put up over the last couple of weeks. But the average exit velocity, like, really high. 90th percentile is very good. Like, you know, he's hit balls hard consistently. And you see that, like, he passed the eye test. I saw him for, you know, 4 days, a few weeks back, and he certainly passed the eye test. And that was a very tough hitting environment for left-handers, where the wind blows in off the ocean, and he just took what he got, and the guys were pitching around him, etc. But he just gets on base. He consistently hits. And I still think if you look at the size of this kid and the type of body he has, this is very like area scouty. I think there's projection remaining. So that's sort of what's most interesting to me with Holiday is it's not just this next level skills. There is some pop there and some athleticism, but also some projection to add strength, good weight, and sort of really sort of soup up that profile and take it to the next level. I think that's really possible. Now, I think for real life, the bigger question would be like shortstop or second base or third base. Where does he end up ultimately? I don't know if he's necessarily a shortstop. The bat plays, though. And I think we're talking about great players all the way. But there's a level of safety for the younger prospects with less experience in A-ball versus the guy who's in AAA. And that really doesn't feel right. But I think we're starting to see two candidates really emerge, really three. And then neither of us have Jackson Churio, but the site has Jackson Churio number one. And I do think that if you look at some of the underlying numbers with him, his contact rate is actually really good this year. It was around 80% in that 77 to 80% range, which is a hard 55 to 60 kind of area, just in terms of contact rates as far as prospects go. The chase rate is just around acceptable, which is what it was last year. Like, it's not crazy, but he is somebody that does chase out of the zone. The hard hit stuff, the exit velocity stuff, is still very good with Churio. And I believe he's the youngest player in AA, and he's playing in the Southern League, which has pitching friendly parks and the tacky ball. So there are some elements working against him. And I think if you look at his underlying numbers, like, he could be hitting a lot better than he is. I think another guy like this is Jordan Lawler, where he's running a 200 batting average on balls in play, but the exit velocity data is up and is very good. And like, some of the other numbers are still very strong, you know? So I think Churio is still a worthy candidate, though. Neither of us have him. And you were a little lower on him coming into the year as well, if I recall. But you actually do have him 32.
Yeah, I try to, when I start curating these lists, I try to think, okay, what if there was no hype beforehand? Like, how much is just like confirmation bias? Like, what if this person just came out of the blue and was doing this? How excited would we be? Would we put him at number three? Or is there pedigree? Is there reputation? Is there expectation? And I think that like what he's doing as a, in his year 19, age 19 season in AA is pretty extraordinary, even though it's a bit like a disappointment. If I'm honest with myself, I kind of am disappointed that he's not just like taking the whole league by storm. But it's still quite extraordinary. I mean, you kind of nailed it on the head with the Ellie De La Cruz and Jackson Holliday. It's funny that the guy who has, you know, 100 less, fewer than 100 plate appearances in high A is deemed as the safer pick. I actually think that it's probably the decider for me for Ellie De La Cruz. He's going to be in the majors before Jackson Holliday. So he's going to have a year of contribution to a dynasty team. Before Jackson Holliday. And so like, that's kind of the decider. If they were both at the same level, I would probably lean Jackson Holliday to be honest, because I just want that safety, that presumed safety. So I do think it's interesting how like the proximity plays into it for me.
It's a very fun discussion. And I think it's probably gonna be the last question that we do here, but I threw this one at you, but take one take one Dodgers pitching prospect for their career. And your options are Bobby Miller, Gavin Stone. We'll put Emmett Sheehan there. And we know there's another, like, at least an easy dozen that we could throw out there. I'll throw other Dodger if you wanted to throw out another name that you'll take for the remainder of their career. But
rest of the Dodgers.
Who are you going with?
Okay, so if you ask me who I would honestly go with, it might even be Emmett Sheehan. Just the RoboScout stuff just loves him. The Stuff Plus stuff loves him. It's just everything just coming in at face value, it would be him. But before the season, it would have been Gavin Stone. And so I'm wondering how much of my decision-making is like recency bias, knowing that, you know, he gave up four runs tonight, Monday night against Atlanta in the first couple innings. He struggled the first time. He hasn't really been taking the minor leagues by storm this year. Like, am I being swayed by that recency, that quote unquote poor performance? And that's why I'm looking elsewhere or thinking he's not going to be the guy that I thought he was. And I probably am. And so if I wanted to be smart, it would be Gavin Stone. But if I'm reactionary and just going by, you know, the shiny thing and what everything is pointing to this year, it would be Emmett Sheehan. And Bobby Miller just sits in the middle there. Like, he's excellent and just kind of hovering in the, in that little thin zone near the top. How about you? Who do you like there?
Yeah, I think the answer, like the rational answer, as you said, is Stone. Emotionally, I want to go with Sheehan, but I'm not even sure, as good as he's been, as much as I like that profile, and I think the opportunity cost still, right, versus probably these other two guys. Wow, do I like Sheehan, but I can't go that far. And I'll even go as far as to say, if you told me that in 10 years he wasn't even one of the top five pitchers that this current Dodgers system produced, I don't think that would be all that shocking. I think I'd be more shocked if you told me that about Gavin Stone or even Bobby Miller, and I'm not the biggest Bobby Miller fan. But all that being said, you know, I do think Sheehan's a very good pitching prospect. Things are going well. Went five innings the last time. Just got to see the more consistent length with him, which I did see for a year in college, and see that he can, you know, sort of push it a little bit. The other thing is he's very fastball heavy. He's a very similar pitcher to Bryce Miller, frankly. There's a lot of similarities, I think, between those two, particularly the style of arsenal and the type of fastballs that they throw, both very flat vertical approach angles with some ride. He doesn't get quite as much ride as Bryce Miller does, but I think it's a lower release height, if I do remember correctly as well. And it's just a matter of like, how do the secondaries look and how do those play, you know, over the course of time. So I think, you know, he's in the conversation, but I feel Bobby Miller feels like the typical Dodgers pitching prospect who's not as good in the minors as he is in the major leagues. And all of a sudden we see him just to like take the reins off and it's just, there's Bobby Miller. Of course, he's probably going to get blown up now that I said this, but I you know, I don't want to write him off either. That's why I brought up the question, because I thought it was sort of an interesting one to bring up, but
it's a great question. I know we have to wrap up. I just want to just interject one last thing. I think Gavin Stone's probably going to have the better career. I think if there was a dynasty startup draft and I could pick Gavin Stone, I might pass and get Sheehan rounds later. Like, I think the value that you'd have to invest for what you'll get, it's probably, for me, it's a better investment Sheehan later than Gavin Stone earlier. Just, I think the value is right now, the perceived value, if that makes sense.
No, it makes total and complete sense to me, 100%. But Dylan, anything else you wanted to say before we wrap this up? Because you are celebrating May 2, 4, right? May 2, 4?
That's right, May 2, 4.
Yeah. Got it right. Hey, that's what I wrote up today.
I apologize to the listeners if they hear fireworks in the background or my dog barking at the fireworks. It's a Canadian holiday, Monday. And that's when people get to shoot off fireworks. That and the July long weekend are the 2 days that the fireworks come out. And it's actually, this is the weekend that most of the fireworks comes out. You can go down to the lake and watch the fireworks.
Interesting.
Very interesting conversation. Very good.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your holiday evening. This has been Jeff Ponce. That's Dylan White. We are the Fantasy Podcast here on Baseball America. Thanks for tuning in.